Thanks for joining us on KPUPLP Patagonia 100.5 FM Community Talk. I'm your host, Julie Holding. Community Talk alternates weeks with Charlotte Lowe's show at the same time, 5 p.m. Sundays on KPUP, Patagonia Community Radio. And now, Marianne Shannon is here to read a poem. Marianne, welcome.
Thank you, Julie. This poem is about saving the scenic Santa Rita Mountains. I was so sick in the city that I could hardly take a breath. When I came down to Santa Cruz County, I'd already accepted death. So I kicked back and I let go, and soon it was plain to see that the clean, fresh air and the good well water and the sweet tranquility were doing a lot for me. Well, I got well in these sky islands. I got well in life. It's good. And now they say they're going to mine these mountains. Oh, how could they even think of such a thing? Now, we're not talking picks and shovels and digging a mine by hand. It's gigantic machinery, vast destruction, deep wounds in the land. The Mining Act of 1872, what was really meant? Because it's not legal if it's not the law's intent. We got well in these sky islands. We got well and life is good. Now they say they're going to mine these mountains. Oh, how could they even think of such a thing? Now, if I was some rare kind of animal, you know that it's a fact that I'd be protected under the Endangered Species Act. But I'm just a common human struggling for my health with a big mining company that wants to increase its wealth. And I got well in these sky islands. I got well and life is good. Now they say they're going to mine these mountains. Oh, how could they even think of such a thing?
Thank you very much, Marianne. Now I'm pleased to introduce Mike O'Halloran. Mike worked in the computer industry when punch cards were the mode, then finished his career in manufacturing management. He retired in 2001 when he moved to Patagonia. Since then, he supported his wife Edith when she ran the quilt store here for a number of years, and he put his management skills to work as president of the Senior Citizens of Patagonia and president of our local food bank. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, thank you, Julie. It's glad to be here.
Let's start with the Senior Citizens. The seniors have so many different projects and activities. Would you start off by giving us an overview?
Certainly. Well, we manage the community center for the town. We have a contract with them to do that. We run a van service. We have a lunch program for the seniors. And we manage a lot of grants that we've been successful in getting. And we do a lot of special community events and fundraisers.
Okay, let's start with the community center. When you say that you manage that for the town, what does that mean?
Well, we have a contract with the town where we manage it and we give them a quarterly report, and we rent it out for functions, and Patagonia residents get a reduced rates for if they wanted to do a shower or a wedding or a 50th anniversary, anything like that,
or a nonprofit event.
We also nonprofits and individuals. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of just fun things, like we have a Thursday bridge group that meets there. The Santa Cruz Singers are going to use it for practice. NAA meets there. So there's a lot of different little functions that we do for the town. It is a community center, so we manage it as that. Not as a senior center, but a community center.
So that reminds me of a question. What is the official name of the center?
It's the Patagonia Community Center.
Okay, because at one point I remember people were being respectful of the seniors and calling it the senior/community center, or that's the way it would be written, but they were always saying the senior community center. Is that no longer the...
It's one of those nomenclatures that whatever one you want to say is probably right. When I refer to it, I normally refer to it as a community center, because that's legally what it is the Patagonia Community Center.
And what is the relationship between the Senior Citizens of Patagonia and the town in terms of management? Is there a document that...
Yeah, there is a formal document that we just renewed about a year ago, and now it automatically renews. So it was approved by the town council. And like I said, we give them quarterly reports, and we tell them what the center's been used for that quarter, what the ins and out and cash flow, and we're responsible for the maintenance and all the utilities. Now, the town, if we had a major, like the roof leaked or something, the building belongs to the town, and they would be responsible to fix anything really major.
But day-to-day maintenance and upkeep is something that you all are doing.
Yes, and the seniors have also upgraded the refrigerator and the oven and the freezer. And so we're continually doing things, and we're in the process of probably installing the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. So we're continually upgrading the facility itself along with the town.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned van service. Tell us about that, because I understand that the van service that's run by the seniors is technically the only public transportation we have in the eastern Santa Cruz County. Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding also. And we service, like we said, eastern Santa Cruz County, and that would include Sonoyta, Elgin, out that far.
And so what is the focus of the van service?
Well, the focus of the van service is, if I was to look at it, would say that it's trying to lengthen the time that people can spend in their own homes, or like a lot of people feel comfortable driving around Patagonia, but don't feel that comfortable driving in Tucson. So if they have a medical appointment in Tucson, they contact Erica Miller, and she schedules it, and we get volunteer drivers to do that type of thing. So it's we probably do 3 or 4 trips a week.
Now, you mentioned contacting Erica. How would people contact Erica if they wanted to get involved in this?
Well, Erica's at the center from 10 to 5, 10 to 3, 2, excuse me, 10 to 2. And the phone number there is 394-2494. So if they wanted a ride somewhere, they would call Erica. She would put that down on the schedule. Then Butch Smith is actually our dispatcher, if you will, and he coordinates across the different drivers to see who's available to do that specific trip.
Oh, okay. And how many drivers do you have?
We have approximately 12, I would think.
And are they volunteers?
Yes, it's an all-volunteer system. It's very different. Like when we go to a meeting of the transportation gurus around, everybody else has paid drivers, paid dispatchers. It's a paid organization that's doing it. And we're the only ones that are really 100% volunteer. So when you go to a meeting, a lot of times they're more interested in making the meeting drag out so they don't have to go back to the office. And we're more interested in getting it over so we can go home.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's be really specific about what kinds of travel and who qualifies for this. What are the kinds of trips that the van program supports?
Well, we go to Tucson is about as far reaching as we go because of our insurance. That's about as far as we can go as northern Tucson. But we go make a lot of trips to the VA, take people to doctor's appointments, dentist appointments in Tucson. Also in Green Valley, Nogales, Sierra Vista. So that's the range that we cover. And to qualify, you have to be, I think it's 50 or older, and or handicapped. We do have a handicapped van so that we can take people in wheelchairs.
Does that include the motorized wheelchairs that are so heavy?
Yes, it has an elevator lift that takes them up into the big van. Mm-hmm. And in our smaller van, which is a minivan, we were the first ones to have a little seat that comes out and down. And so people that are like in walkers and have a hard time just getting in and out of cars, we can use that little chair to get them into the van and so forth.
That sounds like it'd be a lot more comfortable for some people.
Yes.
Now, what about shopping trips? Do you do trips to help people pick up prescriptions or other kinds of shopping?
Yeah, we do a Wednesday trip every Wednesday, and that's to Nogales to go shopping. And typically it'll be anywhere from one or two people to five or six. Mm-hmm. And we take them pretty much where they want to go. We'll go to Safeway, Walmart, Kmart, Walgreens. A lot of times the driver will make four or five different stops, dropping people off, picking them up. Mm-hmm. And it's typically a 3 or 4 hour commitment by that driver to do this mm-hmm. for the community.
And so are there some people who rely on this for grocery shopping? And
yeah, quite a few people rely on it to get their groceries, certainly to get their appointments made, mm-hmm. to make their appointments.
Now, is there a charge for the transportation program?
If you can't afford it, you don't have to pay it. So it's completely a donation base. So we're not for hire, if you will. But typically, if we take somebody to Tucson or Sierra Vista or Green Valley, we have a suggested donation of $20. And that probably doesn't even cover our gas. And then Nogales is $10, except for the Wednesday shopping trip, which is just $5, because typically mm-hmm. we're taking two, three, four people.
Yeah. Now, at one point, tell me if this is the case now, if a van was dispatched and there were some extra seats on that van, it was my understanding that other members of the community would be allowed to ride along. Is that still the case?
Yes, certainly for the shopping trip, that's the case. Because okay. a lot of the other times it is just a single thing. We also go to the airport quite a bit. And that's kind of, if somebody's not doesn't fit the criteria exactly and we have a driver who's willing to do it, then we're pretty liberal in that respect. We don't have a real hard set of rules.
So are you talking about the Tucson airport?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We do quite a few rides to the Tucson airport. And if you look at $20, mm-hmm. what it costs you then to park there and go on a trip for a week or two and then come back. In all our drive, we have cell phones in all our vans. So if somebody's going to fly in, typically the driver would just go to the will call, the mm-hmm. cell phone lot, and wait for them to call, mm-hmm. then go pick them up. So we've got that down pretty pat. Mm-hmm. It works very smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Are there many members of the community who are not seniors who are taking advantage of this? And if not, are you interested in having more community members take advantage of this if seats are available?
Yeah, certainly I think the Wednesday trip could be utilized more. Typically we take the big van, which I think seats like 10 people. So there is space available on that. So I think, I don't know if it's been a long time, I think, since that's ever been filled up. Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 is about the maximum. Mm-hmm. That we
so
have.
In these days of energy conservation and financial difficulties all around the country, that's an option for people if they're really interested in going to Nogales and maybe aren't 50 yet but need some support that way. They could participate in this.
Certainly. We ask for some courtesy for the driver that they don't take excessive time in any place. We're not looking for the driver to have to take somebody to Nogales and be there at 8 o'clock at night. You know, we're looking for a turnaround of 3 or 4 hours in the trip.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems like a very important service for the community. Now, you mentioned the lunch program for seniors. Tell us about that.
Well, we serve a lunch Monday through Friday at noon, and it's $3. And that comes from the Council on Aging in Nogales. So basically, the menu is posted in the post office weekly, so you can see what's going to be served. And typically you have to call ahead and let Erica know that you're going to come for lunch that day, you know, the day before, because she has to call down and tell them how many lunches to bring up. And again, that number is 394-2494 to get a hold of Erica. And we would like to see a better participation in that. You know, and it's not just lunch. It's, you sit down, you communicate with your neighbors, you get away from the house, and you can argue politics or whatever at the tables. And it's a very nice get-together. There's probably now about 6 or 7 people that are consistently going down there. Mm-hmm. It has been more in the past. But.
Is there an age threshold with that?
Yes, I think you do have to fall into that category because it is food from the Council on Aging. Mm-hmm. I think if you pay $5, then their age thing isn't there. So so we ask for a donation of $5 if you're not a senior.
And
you're seeing you have to be a registered.
Is that 50 and over as well, or is that?
I think it is. I know I may have to correct that, or mm-hmm. maybe Erica's jumping up and down as we speak.
Now, during the time that the lunch program is happening, you mentioned that there are other activities that can take place at the senior center or community center. And what are those?
Well, the center is open from 10 to 2. So it's pretty much open. We have internet access there with wireless internet. So if you want to come in with your laptop, you're more than welcome to. Also, we do have a public computer there with a printer. So you can use that. We have a large screen TV there. We even have a Wii game. So
now, what is Wii? I keep hearing about that, but I don't know what that is.
What? Don't you ever watch TV and see them playing on a TV? No, it's a game where you have a controller in your hand and you can play tennis, you can bowl. In fact, I was hoping that maybe this winter we could start up a bowling league just with the Wii game. So you'll have to come to the center and see what a Wii game
okay.
is. Okay.
I look forward to seeing that.
And, of course, the center is managed by Erica Miller. She does a real fine job.
And now, is Erica on salary?
She's on salary. She gets paid by the Council on Aging, and the senior organization makes up part of her salary. So she's probably the only salary employee. Butch, once in a while, will he's a paid driver, one, but almost everything's done by volunteers.
Mm-hmm. And this, I know, to have this many activities happening in one organization, it takes a lot of involvement of volunteers. And who's currently serving on the board of the seniors?
Well, the board of the seniors is, I'm the president. Tom Bartholomew is the vice president. And we have Butch Smith as the treasurer. And, of course, Betty Myers is the secretary. And we have Dick Onstead as the board member, and he's also director of the transportation department. Gary Gay is a board member. Erica Miller is, as well as Keith Bart. And we're trying to get more participation in the Sonoyta Elgin area, especially on the transportation. We haven't had a lot of rides out of there recently, but they should know that they're more than welcome. And I think I took a ride from somebody as far as the west gate of the...
Fort Huachuca?
Fort Huachuca and picked them up.
That's a long way.
Yes, it is.
So now, you mentioned managing grants, I believe. And what kinds of grants do the seniors manage?
Well, we have a dental grant for seniors. And, of course, there's qualifications for that. And, again, you'd have to get a hold of Erica and fill out a request. But we do that with I believe that's part of that funding came from the Patagonia Community Foundation.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we got a $2,500 grant from them, and the seniors put in $2,500. Mm-hmm. And we're going for that same thing again this year. And so, you know, it's we pay for dental exams and a certain amount of dental work. But as you know, there's no coverage for seniors for that type of thing. We also do things with diabetes grants, okay, for vision. We have vision grants. So, we also kind of play a little part of the tennis for the school tennis grant. That's again, pretty much run by Betty. She does the funneling of the money and those types of things for us. So she pretty much manages the grants for us.
Now, when you mentioned tennis, is that the program that Todd Bowden works on with the youth tennis, where they do some fundraising activities and provide tennis for the young people and improve the courts?
Yes, I believe that is.
The tennis courts? Okay.
I wouldn't bet. I'm almost 90% sure. How's that?
And then you also have some special events that the seniors coordinate. What are those?
Well, I think one of our more successful ones recently has been the guest chef program. And I think we've been doing that for about 9 or 10 months now. And that, again, is a $3 lunch. And anybody out there that wants to be a guest chef and has a specialty they want to cook for the area, they're more than welcome. And we can seat about 50 people for that. And so we ask for an RSVP again to Erica. But that's always the second Friday of the month. And we won't be doing it in December. But we will pick it up again in January. And it's just been a lot of fun. And I think nice is that lunch starts at noon, but people are still sitting around talking at 1, 1:30. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice community, because it's not limited to the seniors. Again, it's an open community thing.
I was there at the last one and was pleased to see that there were almost no seats available.
Yeah.
All 50 seats, I think, were taken.
Yeah, and it was a very good lunch. And typically we ask for a donation of $3, but we're trying to cover our costs. And mm-hmm. a lot of these lunches that people are getting, if they were going to go to a restaurant and get it, it'd be a $15 lunch. So we ask them, you know, if you can afford to give more than $3, give more than $3. Mm-hmm. I think one meal, the guest chef before this last one, we had a shrimp boil.
Oh, my.
With new potatoes, corn, sausage, and everything else, and for $3? You know, that's pretty hard to believe.
Yeah.
And some of the other things that are coming up soon, mm-hmm. we're going to have the tamale workshop. And this is about the third or fourth year that we've done the tamale workshop. And it starts at noon. And again, there's a limited number of spots. But again, it's come on down with your neighbors and learn how to make tamales. If you know how to make tamales, come down and just make tamales for the fun of it. So that's the fifth. And then we're going to have a potluck Christmas party on the 12th. And that, again, is open to the community. It's not a senior thing. And the seniors will probably provide the turkey or whatever, the main meat course. But it's fun just to sample what everybody brings, mm-hmm. what their favorite dish is. Especially, you know, if you're a dessert freak, you can really go crazy at that one. And, of course, the closest one coming is Thanksgiving. So anybody out there who's just husband and wife or alone and want to just go and have Thanksgiving dinner with the community, please feel free to come down and bring a side dish. We're supplying the turkey and a ham and potatoes and gravy. So it should be it's a lot of fun. There's going to be entertainment at 11:30 and the dinner at noon. So if you're new to the area, it's a great chance to meet people in town. If you've been here forever, it's great to do that also.
And who's the entertainment?
Well, I don't know offhand, to be honest. Betty would know better than I, because I just, I know that Don's going to be there, and I think I heard that Dr. Mock's daughter is a banjo player, and she's going to be there, and so it should be interesting.
When I worked with the Patagonia Regional Community Foundation, I often answered questions by saying, Betty would know that.
That's a good way to end it. Yes.
We're talking about Betty Myers, who holds so many organizations together in Patagonia. Thank you, Betty. Well, speaking of holding things together, and, you know, it's just amazing how many things the seniors are involved in, and what challenges is the organization facing these days?
Well, I think with all volunteer organizations, there was a core of volunteers that are just aging and aren't capable of doing as much. So we're always looking for new volunteers, whether it be drivers or volunteers for the board, or people, like we said, with a guest chef program, or if somebody out there just has an idea of something they'd like to do at the center, like an art class or a jewelry class or whatever it might be. We're certainly open to those kinds of ideas. And we've talked about cooking classes and somebody who has a specialty. But those, you know, it's hard to get somebody who will take responsibility then for that event.
And just do all of the little details to make it happen.
Make it happen, do the planning, get the people lined up, and the volunteers. Like Betty's taking this whole Thanksgiving dinner thing, and she's responsible for that. And Tom Bartholomew does a lot of taking an event and being responsible for it. So you have a lot of good people, but we're always looking for more. Then we need volunteer drivers. We try to spread the driving around so that a single driver doesn't have to drive more than, we hope, once or twice a month. And
now, is there special training that the drivers are required to have?
The training right now is they have to have a clean license, okay, and we have to be able to insure them.
The seniors provides insurance so that if an accident happened, the driver's insurance would not be involved. It would be the seniors' insurance.
It would be the seniors' insurance. So both vans are insured. The drivers have to be on the insurance policy. We give them a day or two of training. It's not extensive. You know, we assume that they all know how to drive. I think the only one that takes a little more training is how do you use the lift in the big van, the wheelchair lift. And we like to do that annually, go over it again. We don't get a lot of demand for that, but, you know, we make sure that if we have a wheelchair, then the driver goes out the day before and makes sure he understands how everything works again.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Just reinforcing all the details of that.
And another area that really is going to be bothersome, I think, is we're getting more increasing government regulations, especially as it comes to the van drivers. And as I said, we're probably the only organization, certainly in southern Arizona, that's all volunteer in that respect.
So are there other organizations in southern Arizona that serve seniors with a transportation program that have paid drivers?
Yes, Nogales runs a program with paid drivers. Okay, and I think some of this in Bisbee and those places, they have paid drivers and programs that are funded in those types of things. Like here, it's amazing how much stuff gets done by volunteers. And certainly in the transportation area, that it's pretty much volunteer. But these new regulations, while they haven't affected us yet, we're afraid that they keep moving them down lower in the tier who has to do it.
So when you say new regulations, do you mean like rules that the drivers have to follow, or like qualifications that they have to have, specific training?
It's more in the specific training that they're asking for. And so now... our training program, we have a whole set of procedures. It's very formalized. Dick Onstead did a great job of putting these together, and they've been accepted by the state.
What aspect of the state?
ADOT. Because we get matching grants from ADOT.
Arizona Department of
Transportation. And that's where we get our vans from. We have to come up with 20% of the money, and they come up with 80. They come up with the other 80%. But with that comes the forms. And when you do one of those requests for a vehicle, you're talking 3 or 4 months worth of paperwork and everything else. Mm-hmm. That's, again, we're all done by volunteers. Mm-hmm. Dick Onstead, like I said, did a great job last time in getting us a little bit. So it's a thing, but the new regulations will affect us in that we may have to say to our volunteer drivers, you have to take 2 days of training. And we don't know how that's going to go down with the volunteer drivers.
Yeah.
So that's one of the bigger issues for us. And I guess the last thing, and here I'm telling everybody to come down for the lunches, and one of the issues we have is the quality of the lunches coming from Nogales they can be very good or very bad. And I think some of it is just Nogales versus Patagonia and different cultural things that come up on what they consider a lunch. Mm-hmm. I can skate around that issue best I can.
Okay. Okay. Anything else that you'd like to add about the seniors programs before we move on to the food bank?
Well, I think, as we all know, the economy's getting tougher, and it's tougher to get the grants. And United Way typically gives us some funding for the transportation department, and we get 2 or 3 grants a year for the transportation that offset our cost. You know, you have the maintenance on the vehicles, those types of things, and those are getting a little less. So maybe you got $2,500 from United Way. Maybe this time you get $2,000 because everybody's crunching back. So that's I think probably the thing in getting the new people to come in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and read that board list one more time, and so that if anyone out there is interested in learning more about the senior citizens of Patagonia, they can approach any one of these board members and ask a question.
Yeah, and we're having our annual board meeting. Board meeting is always the second Monday of the month, and anybody's welcome to attend the board meeting. It's an open board meeting. And the board meeting in January, we elect our officers and new board members and that type of thing. So if anybody's interested in being a board member, again, let me know or any of these board members, and we'll put together a nominating committee this next board meeting that we'll nominate for next year. So it's a pretty open-air organization. But the board members are Tom Bartholomew, who was the vice president, Butch Smith, who's treasurer, Betty Myers, who's our overworked secretary, Dick Onstead is a board member and also director of the transportation, Gary Gay's a board member, Erica Miller's a board member, and Keith Barth's a board member. And of course, if anybody wants to donate any money to the seniors, we're a tax-deductible organization, and our post office box is 1121 Patagonia, Arizona.
Now, in past years, you've sent out a invitation to donate. Will you be doing that again this fall?
Yes, it should be coming out shortly. And another thing is people can support our fundraisers through the year. And I think that's always a difficult thing for everybody, is to get the word out that you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to use KPUP to get that done.
Well, and thank you for the list that you gave me of the events that will be coming up in 2010. And I'm trying to figure out how to make sure that I check that before every show so that I can make sure to announce those on the show.
Yeah, and I think we'll slip a flyer under your door every
time. Okay, good. Yeah, good. We're here in the studio with Mike O'Halloran, president of the Senior Citizens of Patagonia and of our local food bank. And Mike, would you like to switch gears now and talk about the food bank?
Certainly. Well, I think, number one, I'm in the process of taking over the food bank, and I'm working with Don Pearson, which I think everybody knows who Don is. And Don Pearson is the existing president.
Oh, okay.
But he's training me.
Well, and Don has been president for many years.
Yes, he has.
So. And so I'm sure there's a lot that he knows that he wants to pass on.
And it's not as simple as it sounds. It's a very there's a lot going on in the food bank.
Well, give us an overview of what that is.
Well, the food bank's board of directors is Don Pearson's the president, Joe Furno's the vice president, Nancy Mattson is the secretary, and Cindy Murray is the treasurer. And I don't know if Don Pearson and Joe Furno have been doing things for this community forever.
Yeah.
And I guess it's time for some new blood to get into the food bank, because those guys can't lift the boxes anymore. And
Nor
should they. Well, the food bank itself is the services we provide are, we do a food box every second Wednesday. And that's a food box that we put together ourselves. And typically it's got a dozen of eggs included in it. Then on the third Wednesday.
Now, excuse me just for a second. When you say that you put it together yourselves, where do you collect the items to put into that? Or how do you obtain them?
Well, it's kind of we go down to the community food bank in Tucson. Typically, the last work day of the month. They're doing inventory, and so they have a reduced rate of what you can buy. So we buy food from the community food bank. And we're talking, 10 cents a pound or something in that range, 5 cents a pound at near the end of the month. And for lack of better thing, I'd call it dumpster diving. We go down there and they have different pallet fulls of canned goods and things. And we go through those canned goods, selecting out the things that we want to be able to distribute, typically things like vegetables, corn, green beans, those types of things. Macaroni and cheese is always a great thing, if you can get a hold of peanut butter or tuna fish. So that's done once a month. And then we load that in the van and bring it back and stock it on our shelves. We have a back of the church there.
Seventh-day
Adventist Church. We have a storeroom back in there that we rent from them. And we take those canned goods then and put them on the shelf. Then the Tuesday before, the second Tuesday of the month, we go back down to the food bank there. And typically then we'll get bread. And we'll bring 7 or 8 large boxes of bread back. Again, diving through, trying to get the ones that aren't stepped on too bad and not too badly squashed. And also, again, then we'll pick up more canned goods. Then Tuesday afternoon, when we get back, the boxes then are put together. And we have volunteers that come in and put those boxes together.
And how many boxes are you putting together?
We're at probably about 55 now.
And how big are those boxes?
Oh, typically they'll have a couple of cans of vegetables in it, peanut butter, some cereal. If we're lucky, we'll have tuna fish or something else, some kind of protein associated with it. And snack bars, those types of things. Mm-hmm. So they're probably a box with about 10 or 15 items in it. And then again with a dozen eggs.
Mm-hmm. And you say you do those particular boxes once a month?
Once a month, the second Wednesday.
Uh-huh. And who qualifies for those boxes?
Basically, you just have to come in and fill out a form, and we, depending on which box, which form you have to fill out, and it's how can I say this? There's no stringent proof of income or anything else. We're neighbors helping neighbors, so we don't want to get nosy about incomes, or we don't make judgmental. Does this person really deserve a box, or those types of things? But I'm sure that the number of boxes we get out, we're not reaching everybody who really needs a box. And I think if you need a box, let us know, or if you're out there and you know somebody who should get a box that's not, let us know. We can certainly distribute more boxes. There's probably an upward limit of 75 or so. I wouldn't know where to put that number. But like I said again, it's a lot of work putting those boxes together. You got a couple trips to Tucson. You got people putting the boxes. Then that morning you have to distribute Wednesday morning at 9 to 11.
And where is that distribution?
It's at the church again.
Okay.
And it's there we got a couple people helping them with forms to fill out if they need to fill out the form. We have people that help them bring the stuff to their car. And for the volunteers that are helping, you know, it's also we get coffee and, you know, we get to gab and do those types of things. And plus you get to see a lot of people in town that you wouldn't normally see. So it's a nice affair.
It sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a really meaningful thing to be doing. Now, that's not the only box that you do, though, is that right?
That's correct. We do a box on the third Wednesday of the month also. And that's a box that is all made up. So we don't have to do the dumpster diving, putting it all together. So that's a box that's done. And that, again, comes from the Community Food Bank.
Is that from Tucson?
No, we actually pick it up in Nogales.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay, they have an outlet there, Nogales Community Food Bank. And we pick it up there. But we drive down there with two vans. We have two vans. A pickup truck and a van. A minivan type thing and a regular 8-foot pickup. So we'll take those two down there and pretty much fill them up. So we'll go down there with about three people. Load up the van, bring it back here. There we're doing a service so people don't have to go to Nogales to get it. And again, that's 50-plus boxes that we'll give out.
Mm-hmm.
And typically there's something like some kind of soda that might go with it, or Gatorade, or some other drinks that are associated with it. We really never know what that box is going to be.
Okay, and then do you help with distribution for the Women, Infants, and Children program? Is that part of what you do?
We do, we go down and pick up the WIC boxes for like 8 or 9 people in Patagonia. They have to go up and sign up with the WIC program, do all the paperwork, and then they get a WIC card that's good for a year. And then they all give us that card. And I'll go down there as the agent, mm-hmm. pick those cards up. And we probably deliver half of those to people's houses, the other half to the senior center where they can pick them up. So that's done in the first week of the month or so.
So it sounds like the first few weeks of every month are really busy for the food bank.
Yeah, it's the second and third week are hectic. And then we also then, of course, have the vegetable run. We do that every Wednesday. Somebody has to go down to Nogales, to the produce area.
Now, is that also part of the food bank in Nogales, or is that
That's the Borderland Food Bank.
Okay, a different food bank.
Different food bank that does that program. And we're registered with them also. And we go down there, and we never know what we're going to get from week to week. And that program, we normally start that out about mid-November and runs through the end of June. Then the produce dries up in July, August, and September. Mm-hmm. So we can't get any produce. But we never know what we're going to get. But that's picked up on Wednesday. Then every Thursday at 9 o'clock, it's distributed outside of the community center there in the park.
Mm-hmm. And just give some examples of the kind of produce have you started up this year?
Yeah, we have started up this year.
So what was last week's?
Last week we had green peppers. We had Mexican squash. Zucchini. Did I say green peppers?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something else? I guess that was all this month. It's builds as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So for
as more produce
comes in
yeah,
uh-huh. and things, we get lettuce, we get tomatoes, we get red peppers, we get watermelons, melons. So as the season accelerates, we get more and more goods.
And who qualifies for the produce distribution to receive the produce?
Anybody. We have a donation jar out there, but if you can afford to put something in there for what you're getting, it's appreciated. But if you can't afford to put anything in there, you know, you don't have to. So it's not a thing. Probably trying to cover our gas and those types of things that goes there.
And do you usually distribute all the produce that you bring back from Nogales?
It really depends sometimes. If we probably most of the time get rid of all of it. Okay, we make after the park, we'll go down to the church at the community church where there's 4 or 5, 6 ladies working. We'll distribute there. We'll go to the post office, see if Jackie and her friends need any. So we go to the high school and distribute it there. And I was surprised last time the high school took we had a case of cucumbers left, and they took the whole case because the kids love cucumbers, which I would have never thought of myself. Because I don't like them, so that's why.
And there's a big push this year at the high school on vegetables. Anita CW got that grant to provide fresh fruits and vegetables, if I remember correctly, at snack time at the high school, which is wonderful.
Yeah, the vegetables are on the shady. They're ripe. Okay, so when you go through, a lot of times we select through them. You know, there's a lot of it that may or may not be usable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll give that to somebody who has pigs or something else. So nothing goes. We try not to put anything at all in the dumpster or anything to the javelinas. We don't feed the javelinas.
So you have quite an operation in terms of physical stuff. You mentioned the vehicles, storage, the shelving. Could you give our listeners a sense of what all is entailed and that you're managing?
Well, we have a garage on Sonoyta Avenue. It's that pole barn that's down there by where the old territorial place used to be. We have a truck, a pickup truck, and we have a minivan. Both of them very old. Okay. And we just keep them running. Okay. I think the truck uses a lot of oil and those types of things.
So is the food bank in need of a new vehicle or a new used vehicle?
Yes. I think one of the things I want to do is try to work with the town marshal and see if they, you know, if they have a drug bust or something and a vehicle's available to us that we could get it. And maybe this time we'd want to get, like when we go on certain trips, we have to take both vehicles. Maybe if we could get a panel truck so we wouldn't have to take two vehicles like Nogales.
Mm-hmm. That would save on gas.
That would save on gas and things. And we also, like I said, we rent the space in the Seventh-day Adventist Church as a distribution center. And we got a shed up in an old shed by the senior housing where we have used for overflow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just looked at our clock and we're starting to move towards the top of the hour, but to sum up, do you have any overall comments that you'd like to share about the food bank?
Well, I think certainly the food bank has been well served by Don Pearson and Joe Furno and people that have worked with them. And like we mentioned in the top, they're getting, you know, where they need to take some time off. And we need to get some younger people in there that can lift boxes and do things. And I, as we mentioned, with all the activities that are involved with this, it would be nice to have somebody who could take a given thing and be responsible for it, rather than Don or myself being responsible to make sure everything happens. Mm-hmm. That we could maybe have somebody who would take the third Wednesday and make sure that they got the boxes and they got mm-hmm. the forms. That's one thing we didn't talk about. We have two or three ladies that work on just getting all the forms filled out. There's a lot of paperwork associated with the food bank in order to ensure that you continue to get the product. Mm-hmm. So,
but to ensure that the food bank continues to qualify mm-hmm. to receive the product?
Uh-huh. If we don't do the proper paperwork, then you can get, like, all of a sudden you can't go to the community food bank in Tucson because you're not registered, you haven't filled out the right paperwork or whatever, mm-hmm. and you stop getting boxes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're also, hopefully, we're going to give some turkeys out this Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Well, we should know Monday whether we're going to get some. That's probably the area that you see shrinking up is where some of those donations used to come in.
Mm-hmm. What you've shared with us today, Mike, is an amazing amount of community support in a lot of different ways, both through the seniors and through the food bank. And the amount of time involved in what you've described is really enormous. And I'm just wondering if you'd like to share with our listeners some words about what you find so compelling about this volunteer work that it causes you to be devoting so much of your time to it.
Well, I think if you start thinking about some of the people in the community who have been here before you, who have done this, you know, and started these programs and kept them going. And we talked about Don Pearson and Joe Furno, you know. Mm-hmm. They want to be more like them, I guess, for lack of better. They're good role models. And you look at them and say, geez, here's guys who give up a lot of their time to make sure things happen. You know, they don't just go off golf. You know, they're there to take care of the community. And I think that's what I've found so appealing about living in Patagonia area, is that there's so many people volunteering. And there's so much, the city kind of works on volunteerism. If you look at the senior center or the food bank or even the butterfly garden, and it's an amazing place, and it was nice to be part of it and feel part of it, and it makes you more part of the community. Okay, you get to know more people, and when you're doing the driving, you can drive some of these old vets to the vet's hospital and the stories they can tell you and things. And then we've seen a lot of what comes around goes around. Mm-hmm. People who were driving 15 years ago for the senior van are now having to use it as their transportation. And it's, you know, if they hadn't done it 15 years ago, we wouldn't be doing it now. So mm-hmm. again, we are the call for volunteers. You know, we've got more than enough for people to do.
Well, in this season of Thanksgiving, I just want to say thank you so much mm-hmm. for what you and both boards of directors are doing to support our community. It means a lot to a lot of people. Do you have any last words, or have we covered everything that you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I think so. And thank you for the opportunity to share what we do.
You're very welcome. On that note, I'd like to move on to our next couple items. Wayne Porter of the Together Green Project has offered to supply the show with money and energy-saving tips. This week's tips are focused on cooking. When cooking in the oven, save energy and money by using ceramic or glass baking dishes. Ceramic and glass cook foods at lower temperatures than metal pans. Also, every time the oven door is open to check on what is baking, 25 degrees of heat are lost. To save energy and money, keep the oven door closed as much as possible when baking. For more energy and money-saving tips, go to sustainabletucson.org. Thank you for listening to Community Talk. Listen to Local Patagonia Talk every Sunday at 5 o'clock on KPUP, Patagonia 100.5 FM.